From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1998 when a 10-year-old boy named Sam Brinton was sent to therapy. Specifically, he was sent to so-called conversion or reparative therapy. The purpose was to convert young Sam from being a homosexual to a heterosexual. His religious family thought that conversion therapy could save him. And so the therapy applied various techniques, lectures, conversation. He was hit with electric shocks. And looking back, Sam describes what is clearly mental and physical abuse. Now, to state the obvious, you cannot electroshock the homosexuality out of someone or counsel it. The abuse Sam suffered continues to impact him at age 29 now, but he is channeling that experience into legal efforts. And I'm going to be very honest. Until recently, I thought that gay conversion therapy was mostly a thing of the past, kind of an embarrassing practice that no longer holds any respect or currency. But I was wrong. Only 5 states have outlawed gay conversion therapy for licensed mental health providers. Sam Brinton is leading the effort to outlaw the practice in all 50 states this year. So far, more than 20 states this year have introduced their own bills. And if you're like me, thinking that conversion therapy practices are gone, Brinton points out that many now operate underground, all of which brings us to tonight. For one night only, you can see a new movie that was shot right here in the Rochester area, a story of love and, frankly, about the harm of conversion therapy. And it's a beautiful film. We had a chance to see it this morning. It's called Fair Haven, and we're thrilled to have some of the people involved with us today. In studio, Kirsten Karlhuber is the director of the film. Kirsten, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Tom Malloy is a producer and an actor who is in the film. And Tom, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And on the line with us is Jack Bryant, the writer of the film. And Jack, congratulations on this work, and thanks for taking the time for our program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Well, tonight, 7 and 9 p.m., Pittsford Plaza Cinemas, the 7 o'clock showing is going to be followed by a Q&A. Kirsten and Tom will be there for that. And I wouldn't tell you this if I didn't mean it. The film is beautiful and important. And I was ignorant. In fact, Jack, let me just be blunt. When someone reached out to me about this film, I thought, oh, this is probably one of those period pieces set in like 1950. Mm-hmm. And wow, I mean, when Megan Mack and I dug into the background on this, I think we expected to find out that this is mostly a past thing. And we were ignorant. So thank you for bringing it to our attention. And why don't you tell me a little bit about the background of why you decided to write this film?
Well, I think that for a lot of people in the LGBTQ community, conversion therapy is something that is at least on the periphery of their vision, even today. A lot of people, like myself, come from an evangelical background, and so they're very familiar with teachings of Christian religion and other religions also that promote changing one's sexuality if possible, but at the very least preach and talk about the negativity of homosexuality, at least in their belief. So it's something that's always been kind of an issue that I've been familiar with, but over the years I've had family members who have flirted with the idea of going to conversion therapy or sending someone to conversion therapy. I've had friends who have gone to conversion therapy. And so it's something that has impacted me directly in fairly recent years.
When you talk to people who have been through that, was that some of the basis for the scenes that you wrote, these flashback scenes that show the main character going through that? Is that how you kind of learned about it?
Well, in some instances, yeah, I did speak to survivors, but then also a lot of research went into it as well, because there have been a number of people who have come out of these programs and have talked about the horrible things that have happened to them, and have said, it didn't work for me, it doesn't work, it caused more problems than it fixed, it left me with a life of shame and of psychological problems. So, I mean, there's a lot of accounts out there from people, even folks who started some of these programs have come out and said, you know, we acknowledge now that it doesn't work, and that these sexuality is immutable in this sense, and we shouldn't be trying to convince people that they should change who they are.
We've got a couple of clips from the film that we're going to play for you in our second half hour when we join Gregory Harrison, who's the actor who plays Dr. Gallagher, doing some of the counseling. So you'll hear some of those clips in our second half hour. But let me also ask you, Jack, when it comes to this film and some of the, I would say some of the success of it early on, from what the reviews I've read have been very, very good and very appreciative of the film. Is your goal to tell, you know, a story here? Is it to make change? Is it to move change? Is it to create awareness? What's the goal?
Well, I think it's both of those things. I mean, obviously, we want to tell a good story, and we want to, you know, we want to reach people. But whenever we set out, Kirsten and I, on this journey, we talked about how important it was that we reach people, people who are members of the LGBT community and might think that they should change, think that they should go to some kind of a program like this, or feel that it's possible, people who are ashamed of themselves or confused about their sexuality, and also family and friends of people in the community who might believe that a person could change their sexuality for one reason or another. So we really hope that it would bring this topic into the light for a lot of people and get them to think about things and show them that the harmful effects of it, but also that you know, love between family members, love between friends is more important and is a more viable path to happiness than trying to change who you are.
Well, here's the good news. Even if you already knew all this stuff and you weren't like me, sort of ignorant about conversion therapy, or you just want to see a good movie tonight, the movie itself, it's not totally a downer. I mean, it's beautiful, it's well done, it's tough, but it's really enjoyable to watch, just over 90 minutes, and it's a 7 o'clock showing and a 9 o'clock showing at Pittsford Plaza Cinemas tonight, and that's it. That's your chance to see it here in the Rochester area. Kirsten Carl Huber, who's the director. Yeah, you're going to see some locations around here that are just really tantalizing to see. And the main orchard where it was shot was where?
That was in Victor, New York, at the Apple Farm.
Which has had some sad things happen to
yes,
it. Yes. I want to go see it, and you went, oh, no. What happened?
Yeah, we were so sad to find out recently that their little general store on site had burned down. Mm. And you'll see it in the film. It looks beautiful. I'm glad we were able to immortalize it forever on film. So, yeah, you know, that's so unfortunate.
You've got this great scenery, and as a director, you know, you probably, I imagine at least, you had to temper your desire just to do all scenic shots. I mean, you could have been even more heavy-handed. I just thought it was very well done. But kind of take me through as a director what you're thinking when you're shooting here in Victor.
Sure. Well, the story takes place in Vermont, and I grew up in Vermont. And so, as beautiful as the Rochester area is, my first initial thought was, oh my gosh, it's so much flatter than Vermont. So we had to do a little sort of tricky shooting to maybe not highlight, you know, that we're missing those Vermont rolling hills. But once we found the right area to shoot in that looked most like Vermont, it was just so beautiful. I was so inspired by the landscape, and you're absolutely right. My aesthetic is very much these sweeping landscape shots, and we incorporate a lot of them, and I wish we could have incorporated more because I could shoot on a farm. You know, I could shoot the whole film outside, exteriors on the farm.
It's the story of James, who's 19 years old, and at the start of the film is coming back from a stay in conversion therapy with his gruff father picking him up, played by Tom Wopat, and his dad is a simple, hard-working man who doesn't want to sell the farm, doesn't want to sell the orchard, no matter what the price is, even if yuppies show up with a big offer, because that's the family, that's the history, that's in their bones, and his expectation is that James is going to find a girl, start a family, and take the family farm, and sort of get rid of this, whatever this homosexuality thing is, get rid of that, get serious about work. Obviously, that's not what James wants. He wants to be in music, and there's this family tension. But Jack, you know, I think you navigate this family tension with this question on what family really means, and you ultimately lead to a conclusion that I won't give away here, but a conclusion is that, you know, we ought not give up on any family member who even struggles to understand what's going on with sometimes a child, sometimes a sibling.
Right. Yes, absolutely. You know, I think that I think Richard, who is the father who Tom Wopat does such an amazing job with, is, you know, he's driven by values that so many people can understand. I mean, he's not a villain. He's not a bad guy. He is using the tools that he has in his repertoire, and that is, you know, you have a family, you take care of your family, you have a home, and you build that home and a business, and you just kind of tackle things in the way that, that, for the most part, they always have been tackled. And so in this day and age, those same definitions may have changed a little bit. You know, we have to kind of make allowances for things not being exactly as they used to be. And I think family and loving people means looking beyond what's just been traditional to try to find what really matters.
And let me also ask Tom Molloy, a producer and actor who plays Reverend Thomas here, about what I think the film does pretty well, which is avoid just villainizing the religious community. In fact, there's one little moment in the film in which Susie, who is this potential love interest for James, not knowing that James got no interest in you, Susie. You may be a good-looking young 18-year-old, but yeah, it doesn't matter how good-looking Susie is. That's not what James wants. But she's making a play for James and brings him over for dinner. But they were also on their first date out talking about this rumor that Charlie, this boy in school, she had heard that he was gay. Yes. She's talking to James and not knowing James is gay. Mm-hmm. But she's like, wow, like, what do you think? And James sort of gives the indication that maybe he is. And then he says to her, you know, what do you think about that? And what I think Jack could have done and what the producers of the film could have done is turn Susie into a caricature, saying, oh, well, that's the devil's work, because we do hear that from the conversion therapy scenes. But she says, you know, I think people should be free to live how they want to live, even though she's this, you know, religious daughter. Yeah. And I actually thought that was a beautiful little moment in the film.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I have to give credit to Jack Bryant for his great screenplay. But, you know, at the same time, that is what attracted me when Kirsten brought the project to me, is that it wasn't, here's the religious people are villains and the gay people are the greatest. And it wasn't that. It was, you know, the character that I play is like the sweetest guy.
Yes.
And, you know, I'd love to have him as a father-in-law. And even the character that Gregory plays, you know, he's not mean in any way. Mm-hmm. I mean,
sincere.
He's sincere. That's the thing. And it almost scarier in that way, because he's so in his convictions and his belief, the kind of guy that, you know, the sentence you to death and smile when he's doing it. So, but at the same time, we didn't, you know, that was one of the best parts of the screenplay, was that, and the film in general, was that it didn't make it just stereotypical, like, you know, and I've seen that. I've seen that because we've played over 20 film festivals, and the ones that I've seen other films there that just clearly villainize people, and it's not always like that. And especially people from small towns like Vermont and Rochester, as Jack alluded to, they can only use the tools that they have. So they're not mean people. They're not, you know, as bigoted. It's just that it's learned, and this is who they are. And so they could be as sweet as apple pie, but their beliefs may not sync up.
Tom Molloy's Reverend Thomas might be the kind of person who he'd want as a father-in-law. I would not want all those puns and sort of, you know, dad jokes.
He's kind of a corny character.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, even in your scenes, I'm like, it's like you've been working on the dad jokes here. But also a sincere, loving person, right?
Yeah, you know, and he loves his daughter, clearly, and which is played by the great Lily Harrison, Greg's daughter. And, you know, in fact, his relationship, I have a daughter, Ella, and a son, Tyler, but I actually took more inspiration from Greg's relationship with his daughter. They just get along so well, and he's so protective and so loving towards her that I just kind of wanted to emulate that in the scene and bring that out. But, you know, he's excited about this guy dating his daughter and tries to encourage it, which is very funny. And so.
And Tom, you mentioned kind of taking this film in different places and festivals. I want to ask all of you, and I'll start with you, Tom.
Sure.
what the response that you've seen. I've tried to read as many reviews as I can. I see a lot of really, I think, not only good reviews, but also really appreciative reviews. That's, I think, a fair word for this kind of a film. What have you experienced on the road with it?
Yeah, you know, the crowds have been fantastic and supportive, and the LGBT festivals that we've played in have been specifically, you know, just really enthusiastic about the film. And, you know, I think that audiences in general, like tonight, I'm sure we'll get a mixed audience. And what I like about that is that, for example, I made a film, produced a film called Ashley a couple of years back. It was in theaters, Michael Madsen. We actually did bring it to Pittsburgh for a little bit, but it was shot in L.A., and it was super edgy. It was about a lesbian wrist cutter, you know, like who's being bullied at school. It was super edgy. And that's a tough movie to watch, versus I don't think that this movie is a tough movie for anybody to watch. Because it's almost like it's a sweet film. I mean, I've said this to Kirsten before. I had aspirations in helping this come together that, you know, the kid that wants to come out to his dad shows him this movie and says, let's sit and watch Fairhaven on the couch, you know, because it's not offensive and it's a really beautiful film with great performances. And so, you know, I think that audiences are getting that, and hopefully critics are too, and it looks like they are.
Kirsten, what are you experiencing with it?
Well, I've been lucky enough to be on the road with Fairhaven for almost a year. So I've been all over the U.S., all over Europe.
When did this get done?
Interestingly, we shot this almost 3 years ago.
Wait, it was that long
It was
ago?
3 years ago when we shot. Wow. We've been on the festival run for 1 year, and we just also released on DVD and digitally this month. But the response has been incredible. It's overwhelming to me. I've had screenings where after the Q&A session, it took me an hour or more to leave the theater because people need to come up to me and tell me how much the film meant to them, tell me their own personal stories. And I've had straight people come up to me too and say it really spoke to them because familial pressures and expectations from your parents is universal. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if I can fully grasp how much the film has meant to so many people, but I'm grateful that every day I get emails and tweets and messages from people who have told me the film means so much.
And Jack, I hope you know this question makes sense. I mean, I think you'll know what I mean when I say this is the kind of film on a subject like this that forced me to learn a lot and to update my understanding on a practice like conversion therapy, things like that. And it shouldn't just be a gay film. You know what I mean? It's a film. It's a beautiful story. So, Jack, how do you kind of walk that line of saying, okay, we got invited to another festival. It might be an LGBT festival. It's great. You want to be there. Of course you want the LGBTQ community to grab onto this, embrace it. But you also just want it to be a film. You know, how do you kind of walk that line, Jack?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that there are certain things that LGBT films can kind of assume that their audience is familiar with and not really go into a great deal of explanation about that. We went into, I mean, it could have been a niche film. This could have been something that was really aimed at only the gay community. But from the very beginning, when Kirsten and I were talking about this project, we wanted it to be a mainstream film. We wanted it to be something that anybody could sit down and watch and could see their own struggles in and could learn something from and could take away new information that they didn't have before.
Well, it starts with having two hot leads, and James and Charlie are hot. So.
Yeah,
you've got beautiful people in this.
And
film.
The priest, I think, is not. Bad.
No, you've got beautiful people all throughout the film. It is true, but you know, you also have a cast that I think you have people with a lot of experience, and you've got a film that I hope it hits people. And Jack, I've got a few more minutes with you, so. For our audience who is going to feel like me, surprised that conversion therapy is still real, is that because we kind of just, you know, I mean, especially like a straight white guy like me, you kind of go throughout life, it's easy to be in a silo, it's easy to miss things. Is it amazing that in 2017 conversion therapy is still a thing?
Well, I think it's amazing that in 2017 so many things are still need to be thought about, right? And I think that you know, we could talk for hours about social change and about the ebb and flow of one side pushing against another side. It is unfortunate, but more people are becoming aware of these things every day, and I mean that's one of the great payoffs of social media and of the internet is that people are becoming aware of issues that they weren't aware of 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and people are becoming more involved. They're becoming more engaged politically. They're educating themselves and their friends and their family members, and so it is unfortunate that it is still around, but I think it's very encouraging that, that as you said at the top of the program, states are starting to outlaw this. People are starting to push back against it, and I'm very hopeful that eventually it's something that's going to be reduced and marginalized, hopefully in this country.
Producer Megan Mack and I were talking about how we agreed that had you asked us 48 hours ago, we would have said, oh, there's probably a New York State ban, you know. And five states have essentially outlawed the practice of conversion therapy, and you've got this movement to get all 50 states to do their own version of it. 20 different states have pending bills on it. And thanks to Megan Mack for pulling this information, here's your New York State information. This is from February a year ago. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed an executive order last February precluding insurance companies in this state from covering conversion therapy at all. Multi-agency regulations announced a ban of public and private health care insurers from covering the practice in New York State, and also prohibit various mental health facilities from across the state from conducting the practice on minors. So, and then there's a bunch of details for prohibitions on any conversion therapy on minors in this state. So we're moving towards kind of an outright ban, but at least they're starting with a ban on minors. So there's that. I mean, there's things happening. But there's also, this is also one of those cases where, you know, the New York State Assembly passed a bill that would have banned mental health practitioners from performing conversion therapy on minors, and then a different bill to ban it outright. It's kind of stalled in the state Senate. So these things sometimes take time, and sometimes there's politics, and sometimes they're not the biggest priority. But you do have states working on it. So thanks to Megan Mack for pulling that information. And I guess my guess is people, our guests would say, call your legislators if you care about this. But Jack, before I let you go, on Twitter, Robert writes to the program and says, do your guests believe that most evangelical churches still believe that LGBTQ people are going to help? And in other words, need this? That's a broad question, Jack, but I mean, you want to kind of take a stab at an answer for Robert there?
Well, I wouldn't want to lump any one faith together. You know, I came from an evangelical background. I grew up in the South in Kentucky. And, you know, when I was first becoming aware of my own sexuality at a young age, you know, you go to church on the weekends and you hear about how awful it is to be gay and how you're going to go to hell and so forth. So that is definitely something that still exists. I have no doubt about that, that there are many, many churches of many different faiths, not just Christianity, which still believe that. But I also know that things are getting better, and there are a lot of faiths that are more moderate or more liberal in their beliefs and don't necessarily preach those same things anymore. So, I think that there is improvement, but I still think that there are a lot of places where you're going to find that those practices are still suggested, encouraged, reinforced.
Yeah, Jack, I'm thinking of that teenager sitting in church, hearing that message that being gay is going to hell, knowing that he's gay, and wondering what that means for him. And that does still happen. Listeners, if you want to share your experiences, you know, on conversion therapy or otherwise, you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. The movie is Fair Haven, and it's showing tonight at 7 and 9 o'clock at Pittsford Plaza Cinemas. That's your chance to see it. It's got to be tonight, and it's beautifully done. Jack Bryant is the writer of the film. Has been generous with his time with us in this first half hour. So, Jack, once again, congratulations on this work. Much more success in sharing it with the world, and thanks for bringing it to us today.
Thank you so much for sharing it.
All right, that's Jack Bryant. We're going to let him go. And in our second half hour, we're going to be joined by Gregory Harrison, the actor who plays Dr. Gallagher. We'll talk not only to Greg Harrison, but we'll also have a couple of clips from the film and continue the conversation with more of your questions and comments as well. In studio is Tom Malloy, producer and actor, and Kirsten Karlhuber, who's the director of Fair Haven, showing tonight. We'll be right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, we sit down for the hour with State Senator Rich Funke. Our chance to talk about state business, the budget, the governor's free college tuition plan, and a lot more. Senator Rich Funke taking our questions and yours in the first hour. Second hour, Writers and Books is bringing back Rochester Reads. If all of Rochester read the same book, they chose The Enchanted by Renee Denfeld. We'll talk to the author. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The film is Fair Haven, and it's showing tonight at Pittsford Plaza Cinemas at 7 and 9 o'clock. Two showings, and that's the only time you can see it in Rochester. It's a film that was shot in and around Rochester. The orchard scenes that you'll see, the farm stuff, shot in Victor. Really beautiful scenes there. And so maybe you'll notice some of the scenes there. And it had its world premiere at the Human Rights Campaign in Washington, D.C. It was selected to play in more than 20 film festivals, including Reeling, Cinema Diverse, Q Cinema, Out on Film, and Film Out, won multiple awards on the festival circuit. And the film takes a look at what you would call reparative therapy or gay conversion therapy with a modern lens. I mean, this is not a period film because that still happens. Reparative therapy and gay conversion therapy is often religiously based, and it is based on counseling homosexuality out of the people who are attending. Sometimes counseling, and yes, sometimes gay conversion therapy and reparative therapy includes things like electroshock therapy. That does still happen. There's some essentially rougher or physical or mental abuse. The film Fair Haven takes a look at just counseling, essentially classes and then one-on-one counseling. And Gregory Harrison is an actor who plays Dr. Gallagher. Hope to talk to him in just a moment. We're joined in studio by Kirsten Karlhuber, who's the director of the film, and Tom Malloy, a producer and an actor who plays Reverend Thomas in that film. We do have a couple of clips to share with you, and I want to share the first one, and we'll come back and talk about this. And this is a clip about what God wants. So this is conversion therapy from the film, and Gregory Harrison playing Dr. Gallagher. Let's listen.
Remember, your body wants you to be attracted to the opposite sex.
Why is that?
Because that's what God intended.
I'm not sure I believe in God.
Well, that's okay, James. He believes in you. God made Adam and Eve, one man and one woman, because that's what's required to have a baby. Not two men, not two women, not three people of various genders. One and one.
Kirsten Karlhuber, director, in these scenes, again, it's strong. I mean, that's obviously very strong language. It's very religiously based. But I think Jack wrote it in a way that is reflective of how conversion therapy works. What's the goal in directing these kind of scenes to make sure that it's reality? It's not heavy-handed, but it's tough. What's your approach there?
With Gregory, we got such a great give and take with him. He comes across as so endearing and so gentle and sweet and helpful, and you feel like you want to tell him your life story. And then he goes a little bit extreme, and you think, you know, whoa, I'm not sure if I trust this man or not. And it's the back and forth that makes it so interesting and also, I think, so realistic. Because if he were so forceful from the get-go, a young man like James wouldn't ever begin to trust him.
He's on the line with us now. Gregory Harrison is the actor who plays Dr. Gallagher. We just heard one clip. We're going to have another one coming up. But first of all, Gregory, thanks for taking the time to join the program. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. My pleasure.
I kept waiting for you in this film to have this, like, moment where you become truly the villain of the film, you know, that you go over the top. And you know what? You were just... you were almost likable. I mean, I didn't want to like you because of the message you were sending, but you were sincere. And I'd love for you to tell us how you approached the role. This is such an important role in the film. Maybe, if you knew anything about the practice of reparative therapy to begin with. So how did you approach this?
Well, I mean, I'm glad to hear that you say he was almost likable.
Yeah, he really was.
Likable in this. You know, I think that makes that makes it all a lot more insidious. That there are so many levels that you can like and trust people like this, you know, that you can be seduced into believing that there's some kind of legitimacy to it. And I felt that made for a far more interesting character, more three-dimensional. And I think in real life, I always find, you know, the more frightening bad guys are the ones that you can walk by in the street and they seem just like another nice average Joe, you know?
Yeah,
That was my initial instinct with the role, was just to make him a true believer, who had goodness in his heart and could totally justify this kind of twisted way of thinking, you know? This judgmental, true believer kind of attitude about what God intended. You know, everybody perceives their religion, whatever religion we're talking about, you know, with the dogma of it, with different levels of belief and commitment. And I think people who run these kinds of schools or reparative centers must, I don't think anyone goes to work every morning thinking, I'm going to be evil today. You know, they really believe they're doing the right thing. And that's the most frightening aspect of it to me.
Well, let's listen to the next clip then, and it comes from another of the sessions. This is Dr. Gallagher, played by Gregory Harrison, our guest on the phone, talking about love versus lust.
Think about your parents right now, your mothers and your fathers. Think about how they make you feel. That's love. Now, think about someone of the same sex that you're attracted to.
It feels similar.
Sometimes we remember things the way we'd prefer them to be, not the way they actually were. From the way you described your relationship when you and your boyfriend were together, you could hardly keep your clothes on. That's not true love. There's nothing pure or beautiful about that. It's lust. It's pleasures of the flesh. If you were to run into your boyfriend again right now, you'd probably yearn to be with him. You'd want him to touch you, to hug you, to kiss you. But that's the devil's influence. Sin is very attractive. You have to fight against it.
Yeah, this is someone who really believes it, isn't it, Gregory?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. And you know, the important thing here in terms of the movie and the story structure, I felt, was that Michael's character needs, you know, you don't want to make him look stupid to have swallowed my line, you know, and have it be an obviously false line. You know, you want to make the protagonist smart, and so that you can care about him as the audience, you know. And if I wasn't seductive, and if I wasn't an almost likable, nice, trustworthy guy, then that would make him less intelligent, and I think would make the audience less sympathetic.
Gregory, I said in the first half hour, I didn't know much about conversion therapy, and I thought it was mostly gone. What did you know about it coming into this role, if anything?
I didn't know a lot. You know, it was back then when we were just revving up to make this, the reparative therapy that was in the news was Marcus Bachmann. Remember Michelle and Marcus Bachmann?
Yeah.
Wow. Her husband.
Michelle Bachmann, the congresswoman,
yes.
And her husband Marcus ran a reparative therapy center, and he was in the news at the time. So that's about all I knew about it. Specifically, and I did a little research, but there was a lot of misinformation out there, and there were a lot of different, you know, pro and con stories in the news about it, and it was very hard to get. I mean, I had to trust Kirsten's research and knowledge about the subject much more than anything I could gather from the internet or from anyone in particular.
Kirsten, I know that there are survivor stories. You can get on YouTube. You can get online and find survivor stories, and there's a lot out there. Do you draw on those kind of things, or do you try to kind of create your own story? What do you approach it with, Kirsten?
I actually sat down with a young man who was a survivor of reparative therapy, and that was such a profound experience for me. And speaking to him about what techniques they used, how it not only ripped his life apart, but his entire family's life apart, and also just seeing that deep pain in his eyes, that really spoke to me. And when we went to make Fairhaven, it was really important for me to find a young man who was very expressive in his eyes and just could find that pain, which Michael, who plays James, I think does beautifully. So I spoke to that young man. I also read an account and then subsequently spoke to a young man who is an activist, and he went undercover actually in Marcus Bachmann's facility.
Wow.
And he had a little tape recorder going, and he pretended to be this struggling gay man. And we took a lot of lines in Fairhaven are similar right out of that session, that came right out of the real treatment.
Yeah, when you hear about the phrase that some people have used, and again, I'm just referring to what you sometimes hear in the media, the pray the gay away stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I kind of react like you, Tim. It's almost, you almost laugh
it's
at it
hilarious.
Going like, wow.
When you see the guy that's doing the interview that's, it feels that it's successful, and he's like, I'm happily married now and I have kids, and, it's like, oh, come on, dude, And, they did a report years ago on The Daily Show where they kind of just ripped on it. And at the end, Jon Stewart asked the guy, the anchor, he said, do you think some of these people are happy now? And he says, well, if you mean frustrated, angry, and repressed, he goes, yes, they are super, super happy. And it was like, that was the joke.
Well, Gregory, Tom was mentioned that, you guys have worked together on a number of different projects. And anybody who's in the line of work that you're in, you're going to be in different pieces of work, different films with a lot of different subjects. How does this rank for you in terms of not just, enjoyable to be part of a well-made film, but its importance?
Well, I'm really proud to have been a part of it, and I'm so glad to see that it's receiving such a positive response around the world and these festivals, and now with this release. And I did a film about 20 years ago that was a kind of a seminal movie in the LGBTQ world called It's My Party, where I played a gay man whose lover was dying of AIDS and decides to take his own life after a long party to celebrate it. And it was a true story. And back then in 95, when I shot that, it was pretty edgy to be playing a gay guy in Hollywood. There was some risk involved, now not as much, fortunately. I think that shows a little progress, but that was a really important film, to enlarge, I think, the audience's, the worldwide audience's tolerance and understanding of the differences in people and how people are still people, and that all this harsh judgmentalness is not right and you should reconsider. I mean, the thing I hope for in any film I do is that you give the audience an alternative process of thought, that you allow them to enlarge their thinking. And this film does that. And I'll tell you, as the father of a gay daughter, it's very important to me to do everything I can to try and make the world a better place for my child.
Tom, what have you seen change in terms of exactly the same subject? You go back 10, 20 years in Hollywood, in L.A., in the industry, how much more common it is for gay actors to get roles, for storylines to include gay characters, and the story isn't always about them being gay. That was, that this is much more part of the mainstream.
Well, yeah, that's what I love when I see movies like that, these days, like The Kids Are All Right is a perfect example of a movie that you look and it's like, I was married at one point in my life, and you look and you go, it wasn't about that they were lesbians married. It was about marriage, and marriage is tough for everybody. It's tough for a straight guy like me. It's tough for gay guys. It's tough for everybody. But you go back and Soap, like the comedy show Soap, when Billy Crystal's character was gay, that was like a huge thing. Like, oh my God, and like Greg said, that was a risk for an actor. That was a risk for somebody like Billy Crystal. It was a risk for Greg playing the role back in the day. And so now it's not a risk at all. You know, now it's like, you know, it doesn't carry a connotation. It doesn't. It's you can be a straight man playing a gay role, a gay guy playing a straight role. Neil Patrick Harris in How I Met Your Mother was a perfect example. You know, so nobody had a problem. Like, what are you, he's gay. You know what? No one had a problem with that. So I think, you know, look, with everything going on in the world, political wise, and you know, it's tough to say. Well, we're making progress, but I will say that maybe people have become much more accepting of, I guess, homosexuality and not making it such a taboo subject where, like you said, that you put a gay character in a movie or a show and that's what it's about. It's like, no, it just happens to be a, you know, that's happens to be their preference.
Sure. Jonathan writes to the program and wants to know, does the film touch on shock therapy? It does not, but I'll turn to the director, Kirsten Karlhuber, to explain a little bit more about, you know, the approach to, I know you didn't write the film, you direct the film, but you know, you're working with Jack, you want to create a film that's realistic. I'm sure that's important. You can talk about that in a moment. And to Jonathan's point, the question on shock therapy, from what we understand, does still happen in places. I think it's outlawed. But as Sam Brinton and others who've become activists about conversion therapy will tell you, some of that's gone underground. It still does happen. It's kind of more in the shadows, but it's there. So, but it's not in this film. And tell me about, you know, conversion therapy in this film and your approach as a director, how important it was to make it realistic.
Sure. Yeah, that was everything. We really wanted to reach a mainstream audience. And I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but we would love to change a few minds out there. And I think moderation was key. We didn't want to turn anyone off by going too far, being too extreme. And like Gregory talks about with, you know, his character being real and a seemingly nice man, I think that's more important to touch on than, you know, talking about the shock therapy and going too extreme.
Scott Fearing is listening to the program, who's the director of the Gay Alliance here in the Rochester area. And he says, thanks for this discussion. If people are facing this from parents or church, they should call the Alliance. We have referrals and resources to help. So I'm going to say that again. Call the Gay Alliance. If you're facing this, you shouldn't face this, and you don't have to do it alone. The Gay Alliance has resources to help you. They're easy to find. The Gay Alliance of the Genesee Valley. Thank you, Scott, for reaching
out.
Thank
you, Scott.
Good
stuff.
I hope
to see him tonight. Yeah, that'd be great if he comes down.
7 to 9 o'clock tonight, and I want to ask sensitively, because we're not going to give away the ending of the film, but I think this is a fair question to ask because I can tell the audience that the film is heavy, but it has a lot of moments of beauty, and it will, I think there's a lot of that will leave you with some optimism. So I'll start with Kirsten. I want to ask all of our guests this question. There's so many different ways a film like this can end. You can do it where everything is pat and everybody gets together and sings Kumbaya and the world is happy and there's no more problems anymore. You can do it where it's really wrenching and everything sort of falls apart and you're leaving the audience to consider pain in reality. You can try to find a middle ground. It seems to me that you had to at least let the audience feel that change can happen. And that's all I'll say about that. But Kirsten, what's your approach there to not wanting to tie it up too perfectly in a bow, but to give the audience a feeling that even for minds that had never thought about this, progress can happen?
Yes. And one of my main goals with this project was to support young people dealing with issues like James is facing. And I wanted them to feel that, exactly to your point, change can happen. I wanted the film to feel refreshing, to offer hope and some positivity into what they might be struggling with.
Okay. Tom, what do you think about how you wanted this film to end?
I would say, for me, it's a little bit different than that. For me, it's about, like, you know, a father and his son, you know, and you know, it doesn't always work out this way, unfortunately, but you got to trust the love between a dad and his kid. And it's like, anytime I talk about my kids, I can literally feel like emotions welling up because I love my son so much and I love my daughter so much. But it's like, you know, it's all I can say without giving away the ending is, you know, don't underestimate the love that a dad can have for his kids.
But you know, I think that's a great message.
Yeah.
I wish in our society,
yeah.
It was always enough, you know? But
you're talking to two great dads here. I mean, I don't call myself a great dad, but Greg is a great dad. I know, you know, all of his daughters, and you know, it's and it just it's when you're a real parent and you really love your kids, nothing will get in the way of that.
Gregory, thoughts on that?
Well, I think I'm you know what I love about this. There's a lot of things I love about this film, but I think it's a story of a young man who's struggling, and that's standard. That's their young. Every young person in the world is struggling with growing into adulthood and finding their own identity in life and getting comfortable with it. And that's what this story is about. It happens to be a young man who's gay, but it's a story of a struggling young man, and it's a compelling story about a father and a son who are trying to find a kind of a comfort zone, a peace with each other after the loss of a mom. And I think the movie ends on a real true note. I won't say what it is, but it's a very true note, and it's not a false note, because life is a constant effort. You know, you always have to change, you always have to adapt and evolve. And that's what you see in this film.
Greg, you said you have a gay daughter, yes?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so I don't want to mind too deeply, but I'm just curious to know, in your own parental experience, you know, what that process was like, understanding that and sort of acclimating to that and supporting and looking at the world and hoping that the world is also going to be equally supportive. What was that process like for you?
Well, you know, for me, it was pretty simple. I mean, I've spent 45 years in Hollywood with creative people, many of whom were gay, men and women. I went through the 80s. I watched half the people that worked for me in my production company die of AIDS. I've played gay characters. I am totally comfortable with the gay world. I find many things about homosexuals in the creative world very appealing. I mean, there tends to be a lot of creativity and expression, and these are all things that I've devoted my life to. So I had no problem, nor did my wife, with my daughter when she finally realized that she was gay. In fact, we felt great for her, that she finally was understanding who she was and why she had been confused prior to that. So I'm just, you know, I'm just hoping the world allows her to be herself. And I'm, you know, cautiously trying to advise her how to deal with the world until it becomes that comfortable for her.
Love is love. Love is love is love is love.
All love is cool. In the words of the great Robert Evans, all love is cool, man.
Yeah, very good. Well, we've got a few more minutes left here. We'll tell you about what's coming up tonight. 7 and 9 o'clock at Pittsford Plaza Cinemas. Fairhaven is the film. It's about 90 minutes long, so you can see it at 7 or 9, and that's it. And, you know, Tom, as someone who has been in a number of films, and you're part of the process of making the film, and then you got to figure out how to get it in front of audiences. I mean, I'm sort of surprised it's only got one night in Rochester, but what's that process like?
Well, I mean, with every film, it's always different. God, this was the fourth film I shot in Rochester. I did The Alphabet Killer and Hero of the Underworld and another one we did called Screamers and this one, Fairhaven. And so I love shooting in Rochester. I have a place out here and I go back and forth between here and Los Angeles. And, you know, it's truly every film is different. We are tonight was kind of like a let's show it in Rochester for the people that we shot, you know, and were involved with the film. But, you know, with this film, we've done very well with all the festivals and played in Los Angeles and played in New York and then on VOD everywhere. And now we're also going to be in Showtime on June premiering. So we've done well. I mean, but that's, if you're asking the question, how is that done? It's like, man, relationships for years, ran into our great sales agent, little film company in Cannes, pitched him on this movie, got him involved, I mean, stayed on top of him, then brought Breaking Glass Pictures to them, joined them together. And then it was like, so it's, everything is a battle, but it's a battle that I happen to love and will continue to do for the rest of my life.
Is it a drip, drip, drip in that the early days, you know, you don't know where it's going, but then you get a review or mm-hmm. something grabs it, and you know, a lot of the LGBT publications have grabbed onto this and reviewed it and talked. Does that help gain momentum for it?
It does. You know, any good review is great. And you know, it's so tough these days because people can, you know, you had years ago critics that were, you know, journalism majors and were legit people. No offense to a lot of the critics today, but now somebody in his boxer shorts can write a blog and get, you know.
Man,
you know.
You're starting to sound like we don't need to spray paint the gray on your hair anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the characters.
Back in my day, there were real journalists.
You kind of
like Roger
like
Ebert.
That guy.
But no. But I mean, see, what I'm getting at is that there could be internet trolls. I think we did have
sure.
one that went against this movie that, you know, so is one guy that trolled us. And it's like, you know, at the end of the day, you just try to make something that'll be entertaining. For me, all the movies I make, I try to get great performances, like meaning I want the actors to be great. Obviously, that's the director's job, but you know, when I Greg and I have done 4 films together, and obviously I respect him as an actor because I would want to use him again, you know. And so I try to always bring people that make it real, so that no matter what in the film, you can go, I enjoyed that. That was really great, and I had a great time. And just a movie that I'm not ashamed of, you know. I can look and say, oh, I'd love you to see Fairhaven because I'm really proud of this movie and proud of the work that Kirsten did and everybody else did.
Tom and Kirsten are both going to be out there tonight after the 7 o'clock showing. So 7 o'clock at Pittsford Plaza Cinemas, and then you've got the discussion with them. Gregory Harrison is the actor who plays Dr. Gallagher. You'll see plenty of him in the film. And Gregory, congratulations on this. Thanks for taking the time for the program today. We've really appreciated it.
Oh, my pleasure. I just want to say that
yeah.
Kirsten was an amazing director, and Tom is a real dynamo of a producer, and I hope Rochester appreciates how lucky they are to have him. It was interesting to bring all of Hollywood up to Rochester to shoot this film. I was very impressed. I am very impressed always with Tom's energy and focus and his thoroughness of getting a film made. I mean, it's a really hard thing to do in this world, and he does it really well.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Gregory. You. Much appreciated. That's Gregory Harrison, an actor who plays Dr. Gallagher in the film. Tom, thank you so much.
Happy to be here.
Kirsten, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Fairhaven tonight, 7 and 9 o'clock at Pittsford Plaza Cinemas and wherever else you can find it, because that's part of this process. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a beautiful afternoon, and we'll talk to you. What day is today? It's Thursday? It is Thursday. Friday on Member Supported Public Radio.